A little while since we checked in with Quincy School Committee Vice Chair Anthony Andronico for an update on all things Quincy Public Schools. Hey, Anthony, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I know it's been a bit, but as always, glad to be back.
Yeah, good to have you. Appreciate the updates. Let folks know what is going on with the school committee and with the schools here in the hybrid learning model since last we talked. North Quincy High School had to go fully remote. How's that working out?
Yeah, I believe they're in their final stretch here of being remote for 2 weeks. You know, we had a situation where there was an indoor house party of about 70 students without masks, without practicing social distancing, and just per public health guidelines, we did have to go remote for 2 weeks. And, you know, that's not to say that every person would have been positive for COVID-19, you know, when day one or day two. You know, the problem here is that symptoms can arise, and you can test positive after being exposed to COVID a full 2 weeks later. So unfortunately, we did have to take those precautions, but we're looking forward to getting them back into the swing of things in their hybrid model starting next week. So I'm looking forward to that.
Have there actually been any positive cases in the schools since the hybrid model started?
Yes, yeah, so there have been a few positive cases here and there with students and with staff. But the good news in general, talking with Ruth Jones, our health commissioner, is that those cases haven't led to community spread or QPS community spread. So let's say, you know, one student in a classroom gets a case, we're immediately quarantining any close contacts, working with Ruth to identify any close contacts and quarantining those individuals. And really from there, those folks that have had to quarantine really haven't tested positive stemming from that. So that's the good news. You know, I think the protocols that we have in place, you know, universal mask wearing and 6 foot distance are really what's to thank. To allow us to continue to offer in-person instruction the way that we are. You know, in general, Quincy went to this hybrid model a lot sooner than our neighboring communities, and I'm very glad that we've done so.
Yeah, also since last we talked, the state has changed the metrics for, you know, identifying risk. And here in Quincy, that's brought the city down to the green category, so a low risk. And I know the state also is pushing for full in-person learning for communities in the green. So has that been talked about here in Quincy?
No, we actually haven't had a meeting in between when that shift happened. So within the next couple days, you know, we'll have a meeting on the books within the next week to actually discuss that. You know, and we will need to talk it over with Ruth Jones as well, because, you know, switching your metrics halfway through, I know in general folks might be a little distrustful of saying, okay, well, we were going to be in the red, now we're in the green, well, what are the new metrics? So even for us, for school committee members, I think it's important that we have a full understanding of what those new metrics are, why were they changed, and how do we adjust moving forward. And as we've always done, you know, we're going to listen to our local public health experts, and we'll work with the Department of Education to make a plan for Quincy that makes sense for our students to get them back safely and responsibly.
Yeah, it would seem that, you know, if the 6 foot distancing is still required, then you really couldn't have full in-person learning just given the space limitations.
Right. So the update that was given by the Department of Education or Elementary and Secondary Ed here in Massachusetts was they did push it down to 3 feet. They were pretty clear about that. You know, our issue right now in talking with Ruth is that that 3 foot to 6 foot distance hasn't been sort of proven to be an okay amount of space. And back to my earlier point is the reason why we haven't had a QPS community spread is that 6 foot distance that we had in place. So we'll have to talk that through to see what are the risks, what are the benefits. Obviously, you know, you get in-person learning. The negatives is when there's a positive case, you're talking about quarantining the 8 people directly around you if you're a student. So you're talking about anytime there's a positive case within a class, most likely needing to shut down the entire class. So then you're going from full in person to full remote. You know, folks will have opinions about that. If they do, please do reach out to us. You know, it's important that we school committee members stay informed about what the public thinks. So that's something we'll talk about hopefully at the next meeting.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of school systems are, you know, grappling with the same situation right now too, I'm sure.
Same boat.
Yeah, exactly. How are the technology issues working out with the remote learning?
So up and down, you know, every once in a while, I think, you know, there are some issues, you know, in particular at the high schools, you know, internet will go down. We did spend a couple $1 million working on the infrastructure at our buildings, the Wi-Fi infrastructure, so that things like that wouldn't happen. Every once in a while, you know, it does occur. But I think in general, the transition to using full remote technology has been better than we would have thought. At our last meeting, we did get an overview of remote instruction from the superintendent's leadership team and got to see at each level, elementary, middle, and high school, just what are our teachers doing. And really the way that they've been able to innovate is absolutely spectacular. So we're very thankful to have such dedicated teachers that are constantly thinking outside the box and trying to find different ways to keep their students engaged with remote learning. But I know that at this point in time, anyone that needs a Chromebook, any student that needs a Chromebook has one. I know it took a little while longer than we would have liked, but we are in the middle of a pandemic and there are some things that we just can't overcome. And you know, shipping constraints is one of those things that's just out of our control.
Yeah, it's just one of the many things that that are in short supply, you know, right from appliances to furniture to household goods. And, you know, unfortunately, electronics is one of them.
Yes, it is. But glad to know that all of our students that are in need do have access at this point.
Yeah, that's great. I know you got an update, too, on the HVAC systems in the schools, Anthony, if you could talk about that.
Yeah, we did. So the City of Quincy mechanical engineer, Dave Scott, and his team gave us a report that had to do with CO2 measurements in our classrooms. So, you know, we got a little bit of an education there, learning about what goes into it, what's an okay level of CO2 and what's not. So very briefly, I'll do my best impersonation at the very least. So ASHRAE recommends maintaining indoor CO2 levels to less than 700 parts per million above the outdoor CO2 level. So for example, if I measured the CO2 level in this room, we would want it to be no more than 700 above right outside my window, if that makes sense. So we measured all of the classrooms that we were able to, his team was able to gain access to. And his report did come back that all of our classrooms met that criteria. So that's really great news for us, is that gives you an indication of where ventilation and filtration levels are within QPS classrooms. You know, there were a couple that were inching a little closer than we would have preferred. So, you know, we're going back to those classrooms that were a little closer and, you know, putting more measures in place. Sometimes it can be as simple as a bookcase covering a vent within a classroom, and that was the case in one of them. Others, it can be it's just in an odd spot within the building and it doesn't get as much airflow. So there are some remedies in place that, you know, we're looking to to put into place. And I think more importantly, Mr. Scott and his team will continue to do this testing to make sure that we're adhering. This is not a one and done situation.
Right. And that obviously will fluctuate given how many people are in the room and in the building and, you know, how many windows are open, how many windows are closed, given the weather. So it's, yeah, something needs to be monitored, I'm sure.
And that's why we'll have to continue that testing.
Sure. Let's change topics a little bit and talk about how the Quincy Public Schools are handling diversity.
Yeah, we had our second Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Subcommittee before our last meeting, and I thought it went very well. We brought in Mr. James Ikeda, who's a Quincy High teacher. He's been with us for if my memory serves me correct, nearly a decade at this point. He and a few other individuals within QPS, QPS teachers, had got together over the summer just to talk about, you know, some of the Instagram posts at the time that students had made, ongoing world events, and, you know, how Quincy could do a better job in this area. And they sent over to the school committee and the administration five things, recommendations that, you know, we could take to further our progress in this area. And I'm just going to read off what those five topics were that he had presented to us at this meeting. He asked that we join, or rather they asked that we joined Massachusetts Partnership for Diversity in Education, known as MPDE, that we change the language of job descriptions to be more inclusive and welcoming, that we create a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Educators Council, so that teachers and staff within QPS can continue to talk about these issues and recommend policy to the school committee and with, even within their own schools, and to democratize the hiring of new faculty by including more educators in the process. And the fifth one was to create a pipeline program targeting persons of color educators in training. So those were the five recommendations, and to this point, Quincy has actually done a few of them. So we're now a member of the Massachusetts Partnership for Diversity in Education, and there are about 30 districts that are a part of that consortium. And some of the things that you get as a member, you have access to have a marketing profile on their website, you get access to their resume database, you have monthly member meetings to review best practices and get new ideas for your district to incorporate, and you're able to participate in their spring job fair. So we're pretty excited to be a member. We were on the wait list for a little bit, but now we're in. So that's step one. The next part is we did add a QPS diversity affirmation for external job postings. So it's a statement that's just a little beyond the standard language, simply saying that, you know, QPS is an equal opportunity employer. You know, the way that we see it is that's basically the bare minimum, is saying that it's a, by law, you're legally, you know, you have to say that. But we wanted to take it a step further and affirm that we were focused on these goals in general. So we've done that. And then, you know, a few other things we're working on with this group and plenty of others within the QPS community is looking for opportunities to create that in-training program, looking for opportunities to get together more often to talk about these issues. And one of the other parts is we have democratized a little bit more the hiring of new faculty by bringing more folks into that just into that process in general. One of the things that was brought up at the meeting was that James was hired, and then he hired, at the time he lived in New Jersey, and 6 days later he was expected to be teaching in QPS. So even things as simple as, you know, smoothing out a transition, I think it's something that educators within QPS can speak to and might be able to help us with in general. It can open up more opportunities to folks across the country. So that's some of the things that we went over with that group. But we also went over, you know, just how QPS staff compares with surrounding districts in terms of diversity. You know, we were compared to Framingham, Lowell, and Taunton because of their demographic makeup is somewhat similar to Quincy. And we also compared ourselves to Milton, Weymouth, and Braintree as surrounding communities. And essentially what that report back says is that we have some work to do. About 7% of our staff, overall staff, are persons of color, whereas the diversity of our student population is 53 or 56%, but we're a majority minority district in terms of student population. So still a long way to go, and these are some of the things and tactics we're gonna use to try to help us get there. So that's what we went over at the meeting. The last bit that we did go over was the feedback from the professional development surveys for Visions Inc. That was the diversity and equity training we gave to our staff, and overwhelmingly positive feedback from those surveys. So I think that's something we're going to continue to look at and try to partner with Visions as we go along to implement for QPS.
Are there any additional costs associated with that membership, Anthony?
It's a minimal. I forget exactly the number, but I know that the superintendent and the administrative team does have it. And one of the things that we mentioned at that meeting as we move along is there are a lot of grant opportunities, whether at the state level or the federal level, for these types of programs. And, you know, money's going to be tight over the next year or so. Revenues have fallen for obvious reasons. So, you know, we're going to need to expand revenue sources. And if we want to continue this work, we're going to have to think outside the box a little bit.
Sure. Speaking of hiring, obviously you need a new special education director now that Aaron Perkins is the assistant superintendent. So how's that going?
Yeah, so we posted the job for 30 days after Aaron became our assistant superintendent. We're really excited to have her in that role, but sad to see her leave the special education role. So it was open for 30 days. We ended up having 11 applicants to that job. The superintendent did say that 8 of those applicants were credentialed for the position, have the right certifications from the state. And right now we are in the interview phase. I know that as part of that team, my colleague, Kathy Hubley, as the special education subcommittee chair, is on that interview team. The superintendent, assistant superintendent, a few within the special education department, and a few staff, a principal, et cetera, are taking part in that interview. And, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll have a recommendation from them and the superintendent, and then the school committee will confirm that appointment. It's pretty similar in a way where, we're not necessarily selecting the next special education director, but we just need to confirm that, yes, this person meets the qualifications, and there's not an outstanding and glaring reason to not confirm them.
Okay. It must be extremely helpful to have Erin in that process.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How long had she been special ed director, do you know, roughly?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do know that she worked her way up over the last 20 years, starting out I believe it was Beechwood Knoll.
Yep.
She's had every position within special education. And if there's anyone that knows what it takes to be in that position, it's her. And we're very thankful to have her, not only as part of the interview team, but as our assistant superintendent.
Sure. Speaking of, any update on the progress of the new Special Education Learning Center on Old Colony Avenue?
Yeah, at this moment in time, we're still talking about, they're still going over, the updates building. But, that is something that I believe our Special Education Subcommittee next week, I believe the 18th, we'll be talking about just to get an update on where things stand and what expectations should be for folks moving forward.
Okay, we'll look forward to that, certainly. How's enrollment going, Anthony? I know there has been some concern during this pandemic kids maybe are looking for, or families are looking for a private education or smaller communities where the COVID is not as prevalent.
Right. Yeah, enrollment is just about steady. It's declined by maybe, 50 or so students, but it's not anything that's overwhelming at this point. And looking at our last update, 50% of our students are in hybrid and 50% are in full remote. So that just gives you an idea of where things stand in general. There's not really an easy answer as far as what to do. So glad to see that for now, enrollment's holding steady. I know some communities have had a little bit more concern about their dropping enrollment. And the main reason why there's concern in general, just so folks know at home, is, for every student that enrolls in your public education system, there's a certain dollar amount that the state gives you that's associated to that. So it can help continue programs and that at this point in time are pretty critical to the success of our students and families.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not surprised at the 50-50 split, given the way the surveys, you know, panned out leading up to this point.
Yeah, from way back, you know, it was 33% for full remote, hybrid, or full in person from way back, and it was pretty consistent at every level. Again, there's no easy answer to any plan you put forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's any consolation, I guess it proves that the surveys were accurate, you know, and the people were truthful in their feelings.
Yes. And actually, on that note, I did want to mention that if surveys regarding, you know, the fall reentry to this point have gone out to educators and to parents. I know I'm not certain from the time we had our last meeting to now if the student survey has gone out as well. But just to give us an idea of what's gone well during reentry, what hasn't gone well, what are things that we can work on, where can we improve? And I know there are going to be some strong feelings from folks, but you know, at the end of the day, we're doing the best that we can to make sure that we're delivering for the families of Quincy. And a large part of that is hearing them directly and getting feedback from them.
Yeah. Are there any, has been discussion or any plans about kind of post pandemic assessment or triage, if you will, as to, you know, how this has impacted the overall quality of education for students?
Yeah, so we've talked about that, not as in depth as I think most of us would have preferred to this point.
Yeah.
A large part of assessing that at this moment is we don't know when this will end. So to say we'll assess, I don't know, is it in the spring? Is it next fall? Is it beyond that? And what are some of the things that, you know, we'll put into place? So another part of this is MCAS testing. So And last spring it was suspended, but this upcoming spring, it's still sort of in between if it'll be around or not. I could see a situation where you waive the requirement, but you still, or rather the requirement to pass MCAS, but you still make students take it, just as a way to sort of try to figure out where students are, you know, as compared historically to, you know, their predecessors. So we're still trying to figure out exactly how you would assess. I think step one, though, as I just mentioned, is those surveys. You know, is it going well? Are we meeting social and emotional needs? Are we meeting academic needs? Where can we improve in general? And I think there's going to be work to do, absolutely. Whether it's more enrichment over the summer that we offer. I know even this past summer, although programs were fully virtual and remote, a lot of families took advantage of them. So I think that's something we'll need to continue moving forward. But just how much of that is something that we'll need to figure out through either MCAS testing or in-house MAP testing that we've done in the past.
Sure. Let's talk about some positives, right? some students have qualified for scholarships.
That's right. Yeah. So speaking of, we had 188 students within QPS qualify for the John and Abigail Adams Scholarship. And that's through their high score on the MCAS test. And that scholarship allows them to go to, I believe it's UMass Amherst with free tuition if they so choose. So It's a great program. Hats off to those students that have qualified, and you know, I think if there's ever a time to take advantage of that opportunity, now might be it.
Yes, absolutely. It'd be a help to a lot of families, I am sure. And it just goes to show too that academic achievement is still happening.
Right. Yeah. No, it is. And you know, hats off to those students who put the time in to get that achievement. You know, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Reminder for folks, Anthony, that grab-and-go meals are still available, yes?
Yes. So grab-and-go meals should be available at all of our schools for pickup. I believe it's between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. On days the school is in session. Those meals are free for all students who are 18 and under. And, you know, to this point from September 6th up to at least our last meeting, we had handed out over 90,000 grab-and-go meals for students at that time. I'm nearly certain as of this recording, we're just over 100,000 or just under, right about that threshold. You know, hats off to our food services team that has needed to be a little innovative in the meals that they prepare, how they deliver them, and how they pass them out. So big thanks to them for making this program work.
Yeah, is it still at all the same locations, do you know, that it was over the summertime?
So my understanding is it did switch from when we were in school to summer, and now that we're back in school. So my understanding is that it should be available at all schools at this point in time.
All schools. Okay, very good. That's a help for families, I'm sure, especially if you have two or three kids in the school system.
It can make a difference.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Anything else? The police department made a nice donation recently.
They did. They made a donation for just over, I think, $3,200 to the QPS CARES program for our special education students. My understanding is that funding was raised way back in April through the Autism Awareness Month QPD patches that they had sold to benefit QPS CARES. So I really want to just say a thank you to them. They've always been a great community partner. And we're really lucky to have them as a partner here in Quincy.
That's great. Very good. We're recording this on Veterans Day, Anthony, and of course, a lot of Quincy Public School students go on to serve in the military. And I know some teachers and staff have served and are coming back as teachers as well. So it's a meaningful day for sure.
No, it absolutely is. And I just want to say thank you to all of our veterans, those who have served, to protect our freedoms here at home. It's a job that, if we could pay $1 million, we absolutely would, but they gladly serve for far less. And we have a deep debt of gratitude for them. And I just want to say thanks to QATV as well for airing the ceremony today for all to see during COVID. You know, I think it's important that although we can't gather in person like we normally do to celebrate the day, that we do our best to maintain our traditions. So thank you to you as well.
Oh, thank you. It's our pleasure to help. Folks want to reach out to you or the school committee, what's a good way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my email is anthonyandronico@quincypublicschools.com. Always more than happy to have a conversation, listen to your concerns. And of course, my colleagues are as well. You know, their contact information can be found at quincypublicschools.com. It's the same email structure, first name, last name, @quincypublicschools.com. And, if you can't find any info, just reach out to us.
All right. Anything else we should touch on, do you think, right now, Anthony?
Well, I think that'll do it. Just looking forward to our next meeting on November 18th, Special Education Subcommittee at 5:30, regular meeting at 6:30.
Meeting in person now?
We are for right now. There might need to be another discussion about that given the governor's latest guidelines regarding universal mask wearing, whether or not you can have a 6-foot distance or not. So that's another conversation I'll need to have with my colleagues.
Sure. All right. Well, we'll catch up with you one way or another after that. Thanks so much, Anthony.
That's good. Thanks, Joe.
All right. Take care.